Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 83 for November 14th, 2008. Paul of Duty. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/windows. And by GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. For a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting for your PC or Mac, visit GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. It's time for Windows Weekly. This is the show where we cover and talk about and in every way dissect and manipulate and shuffle through all the facts, figures, and known information about Microsoft products, including Windows, the Zune, the Xbox 360. Here he is, your Windows buddy, Mr. Paul Thurrott, wearing his gamer tag on his sleeve. He's getting it tattooed later in the week.
I might as well.
I bet there are people who have their gamer tag tattooed on them.
Well, of course, mine is my name, so that would be sort of weird.
It'd be no point.
Yeah. Put a little heart around it or something. God, I love myself.
There are people who have, there are two people who have a TWiT logo tattooed on their arm.
Wow.
So one of them is East Coast Girl in our chat room. The other is Jammer B. No, not Jammer B. Brian, what is Brian's handle? I can't remember what Brian's handle is in the chat room, but Brian is the other one. And they have lovely. The TWiT logo makes a fine tattoo, I might add.
What is that thing? A little flea? What are we looking at there?
Yeah, it's a flea.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. But it's actually an AND gate turned on its side, and they put a red eye in it.
I see. Because it looks like those things from Centipede that fall from the screen really quickly.
Oh, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So it could be
like
that.
Every time I see it, I think of that sound it makes, you know.
It could be that. Well, you must have played a lot of Centipede. Weren't those mushrooms?
No, these are I think they were actually fleas. The ones that fell. They would fall very quickly.
The flea flickers.
I don't know.
Were they fleas, really? I got to play Centipede.
I believe they were fleas.
Now, I don't think centipedes actually have fleas.
Oh, jeez. are you disputing my video game knowledge?
No. I'm not saying the game doesn't. I'm just thinking that centipedes themselves are not furry enough to attract fleas. Centipede. Well, anyway, that could be what that is. And for all I know, the designer, the lovely Dorothy Yamamoto, who designed our TWiT logo, could well have been thinking centipede.
Okay.
I just neglected to mention it to me.
Hmm.
So how are you today, Paul Thurrott? The site is, of course, the Windows super site for Windows, winsupersite.com.
I am good, but it's been a busy week, surprisingly.
What you been up to?
I don't know. You know, this Windows 7 stuff. We have the Windows Live stuff we'll talk about later that happened today. Well, or was announced today. None of it actually happened
I got
yet.
An email, a PR email saying, check out the new Live.
Yeah, it's really exciting, actually. They've done a lot of stuff there.
So there's stuff then, newer than even the stuff we've talked about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, a lot of it, actually.
I thought they were just getting around and letting me know. So there's new stuff. I'll have to check it out.
Yep. And then there's the video game stuff. I've been busy plowing through a couple of games lately. So
now, you didn't go to WinHack.
WinHack?
WinHack. No, but you probably also have some WinHack news, too, for us, I would think.
No, I might.
Not really. Nothing to say. Well, let's. Where do you want to start here? What do you want to begin with?
Well, let's start with Windows 7.
Yay, Windows 7! I actually saw it for the first time yesterday. We had somebody in from IdeaMine in showing us the.
Oh, right. How was that?
Oh, it's very cool. It was the air hockey demo that they showed.
Okay.
PC. But nice. Because he had an HP Touch Smart screen, which is the
One of the things they did at PDC that I thought was kind of cute was obviously the LACC is an enormous structure, you know, a huge building.
Okay.
And it's comical in some ways because sometimes you have to go from one end of it to the other, and it's like a several miles walk is what it feels like. But they had those Windows Surface tables all over the place.
Yeah.
So you could actually kind of sit down and relax and then play some of the games or flick around the photos and stuff. And that's all that stuff that you're talking about. You know, it's the same applications on the Surface table that were in.
Right. Including air hockey. They had air hockey on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool.
You know, I'm a little more of a convert. It's not just a big ass table. It's
it's much more than a big ass.
It's a platform.
It is a platform.
It's a platform.
Because of course it's a platform. Microsoft made it. That's all they make.
That's all they make. So and seeing in different applications, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
We showed a video of the application they were showing off at PDC where they put a camera on the Surface table. It had an iFi card in it, and you could take a picture, put the camera on the table, and then the picture would immediately go in the slideshow on the screen. And that's pretty cool. That's really neat.
You know, I didn't put this in the show notes today, but I don't know if you heard about this, but we should talk about this, is Google Earth has added a feature, or will add a feature today. I need to let me go look and see if it's in there yet. But they are, let's see. No, I don't see it in there yet. But apparently, they're working on a... you know, they have these galleries, like sort of specialized versions of Google Earth that do special things.
Yeah.
You know, that don't just let you zoom into a certain area, but actually, you know, are interactive and do different things. And this is one for ancient Rome.
Oh, wow.
So that you can do a Google Earth view of ancient Rome as it was at the height of the Roman Empire.
That is cool.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound great?
Wow.
I haven't seen it yet because it's not live yet. But there was a story about it this morning, I think, in the New York Times or maybe the Wall Street Journal.
That is really neat.
Yeah, so it's not there yet, but if you go to earth.google.com and then there's a galleries link on the side, sometime today, supposedly, this thing will be available. And I'm looking again. I still don't see it. Yeah, so it's not there yet. I checked this morning. But there's some cool galleries there, too. There's other ones as well. But, you know, there's like a rising sea level animation that shows you how that has changed or how it could change, I guess, in the future.
Right.
Charlie like Chaplin. That. So. Yeah, yeah. That was like a City of London timeline. But they're doing one for ancient Rome that I think sounds awesome. I'd like to see it, but it sounds like it's going to be really good.
Really neat, yeah.
Yeah.
So how do we get off on this? Oh, we were talking about Surface.
I don't know.
And Windows 7. So what more have we learned about Windows 7?
Well, all kinds of stuff. So one of the things I wanted to do, you know, going forward, and this time, unlike with Vista, I'd like to get this done before Windows 7 ships. Which is going to be increasingly difficult because, of course, it's shipping a lot earlier than we think.
Like tomorrow. But,
okay. Like tomorrow, yeah. That will be the big announcement tomorrow, just in case it wasn't busy
it's
enough
here.
Today. So I've been going through a lot of the documentation that Microsoft's provided, and I've created a list of features that are either new or enhanced since Windows Vista. And I thought this would actually be pretty easy because Windows 7 is very much the next version of Windows Vista, right? So, I mean, you know, you can kind of list in your head that maybe the top 10 sort of new features. But actually, as it turns out, I was able to come up with over 50 of them.
Wow.
And interestingly and surprisingly to me, there were at least three in there, or four maybe, that I had actually never seen mentioned anywhere before.
Even at PDC?
Especially at PDC. I mean, they were very particular at PDC to talk about certain aspects of the system, and right. They didn't talk about other aspects of it. In fact, there were features that had leaked in earlier builds that were not in that M3 build that we got and that will presumably be added, you know, later down the line. Maybe they were taken out because they weren't ready, like the voice command behaviors that we talked about earlier.
Taskbar, so that new taskbar.
Well, the taskbar they did, but they at least talked about that. But I mean, right. this is some stuff that they just didn't, you know, discuss previously. So, for example, you've heard about Ready Boost, probably. This is where you can stick in a USB key
right.
and gain. It's sort of a caching type mechanism.
And that's on Vista.
That's in Vista. But in Windows 7, they're improving it in a number of ways. First of all, it extends to virtually all memory types. So you can use an SD card or with a Sony memory stick or something instead of, you know, just a USB memory key or a USB-based storage device. So it extends to other devices. You can use more than one device. So if you have two memory keys or three or whatever, you can use multiple devices for the first time. And it now supports over 4 gigabytes of caching as well. So the current version is limited just to those to 4 gigabytes or less.
Do you notice a big difference with Ready Boost?
Well, the truth is I don't really use too many computers that have small memory footprints.
Right.
So on a system with 4 gigabytes of RAM or more, I just wouldn't use it, you know. And the laptops that I had used with Vista that were limited to 2 gigabytes, like the old MacBook I was using for a while, or some of the older laptops, those over time have phased out. So actually, I'm at the point now where I don't really have any machines that would benefit from this at this point. And I think also that some of the performance improvements in Windows 7 will probably obviate the need in some ways for ReadyBoost. I think when Vista first shipped, especially, obviously, you know, performance was at a premium, to say the least. But some of the other stuff, you know, this is another thing, and this is a big deal. In fact, I remember back several years ago being at a show in New Orleans, which I just remember because we were in some crazy Anne Rice-looking hotel room, literally with candles and billowing silk curtains. It was insane.
Wow, cool.
But they had the worst wireless network on Earth. And I was sharing...
Of course, that's what you remember most.
Absolutely. Well, what I remember about it is it's myself and another guy from the magazine sharing a room. We're trying to get online. And so we eventually decided, look, we need to get one connection going and we'll share that connection.
Right.
And, you know, Windows, you can actually make this work. You know, in other words, you connect with one wireless device or one wired network connection, and then you can share it out and sort of use that PC as a wireless access point. You can actually get this to work, but it's incredibly complicated. In fact, on this day that I'm talking about, we never did get it to work. But at the time, I had a Macintosh laptop with me, probably my iBook or one of my first MacBook type laptops. And sharing a connection on the Mac is actually very easy. So in Windows 7, they're adding something called Wireless Device Network. It's just a feature that will let you do this thing, which is use your laptop or PC, I suppose, as a wireless access point for other PCs. So if you're connected to a network, you can then share it out over a different network connection. You know, kind of a basic feature in a way, but it's something that just, you know.
How is that different from just like kind of an ad hoc network, a Wi-Fi network? That's just, isn't that an ad hoc network?
Well, it's just so hard to set up in Windows today. So this is
making
specifically
it easy,
set up for sharing. Well, I mean, I suppose you could sort of, you know, break the system in some way. So if you're in a wireless hotspot where maybe one of the people you're with has a, you know, that account they need to get online, but the rest of you would have to pay, that person could actually share it out with you, for
Very
example.
Cool.
Yeah, or in my, you know, this is not a typical scenario, but for someone like me who has, you know, maybe travels with two laptops, I could get both of them off online very easily in a hotel or whatever. That'd be
right,
kind of nice.
Right.
So that kind of stuff. So there's others. You know, there's a power config utility that's not available in M3, but it's coming down the road. And this is basically just one of the many troubleshooting type things that are coming in Windows 7. I think, you know, what they've discovered over time is that Windows, when it works well, but when it doesn't work, it doesn't do enough to really help people figure out what's going on. And in Windows Vista, there's a whole set of technologies there designed around, you know, figuring out when there's a problem, reporting it back to Microsoft, and then they get back to you when they solve a problem. And that's fine if the problem has ever been solved. But, you know, if you're there at the time and Microsoft doesn't necessarily have something online, or maybe you can't even get online, there's a bunch of stuff in Windows 7 now where you can do troubleshooting in your own way. And this is sort of an automated utility that will actually watch your computer over time, and then it will make recommendations based on your power consumption or other power management type issues, where they can say, you know, you've been using this thing in full-blown, you know, power mode, and you don't really need to do that. You're not gaining anything. And in fact, you're losing severe, you know, battery life. And here's the difference it could make, that kind of thing. So that's kind of a cool utility that's coming, you know, and there's a few others, but I created a whole list. So there's a list of new features coming in Windows 7 that I put up on the site in the feature focus. And then over time, I'll kind of blow that out and write articles about each one of those.
You know, it's funny because in one way they're selling Windows 7 as being, you know, fewer features.
Yeah. Well, and on the other hand, see, I've been sort of wondering about the whole major update thing, right? Because you look at this thing and, it looks like Windows Vista, and it clearly is Windows Vista, you know, improved. But I've sort of wondered, you know, does it really deserve the major release tag? And actually, when you look at this list, which is over 50 actual features, you know, it's not like one of those Apple lists where they say we have 300 new features and 11 of them are different fonts and
right.
13 of them are improvements to calculator, you know, which, by the way, they've done.
There's a new calculator.
Yeah. Well, there is a new calculator. So Windows Calculator is one of the new features in Windows 7, but it doesn't get 17 features. It's one new feature.
Right.
So
right.
The fact that there are, in fact, 50, at least 50, because this is what we know so far, there'll be more coming down the road when beta 1 hits, is actually pretty impressive. And you know, some of them are not a big deal, right? There's a new version of Paint, you know, big deal. But some of them are a big deal, and it's causing me to sort of reevaluate, you know, how I think of Windows 7.
So you're saying you're thinking more, it is now, it is a major new version of Windows.
I think if there's enough new functionality and enough changes, even if they're surface changes,
right,
you know, where it's a notably different experience for the user, that, yeah, I think it does justify that major, yeah, that major tag. You know?
Cool.
Sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and we still don't know when it's going to be out, but we keep getting tea leaves saying maybe next year.
So. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Windows Live, new and improved. I got the email today. What's new?
Well, all kinds of stuff. So they made a big announcement today. The thing that's odd about the announcement is that there actually is nothing that you can go and see right now other than, you know, screenshots and that kind of thing. They've allowed me to test some of this stuff privately, and I don't know that I can post any of the information I have from the stuff I can look at, but they've provided me with shots that I can put online and so forth, and I'll be writing about it in the days ahead. But what they're basically doing is they've split Windows Live into two categories. There's the application stuff that you download and install on your PC, and that's now called Windows Live Essentials, right? This is the application suite. That will be updated very soon into sort of a release candidate stage, so near final. So everything except for Windows Live Movie Maker will basically be near final. And then very soon thereafter, based on feedback, they'll ship the final version of that. So I think you can expect that to all happen by the end of the year, at the very latest, you know, probably January. On the services side, which what they're now just calling Windows Live, they're improving virtually all of the services that they have out there already. They're renaming some of them, and then they're adding a slew of new services. And then I think the third piece, and maybe the most major aspect of what they're doing, is they're integrating with over 30 online services, social networks, and other services, so that you can use Windows Live as sort of your central hub for all of these identities you might have online. So, you know, people access things like Twitter and Facebook. They have Amazon accounts. You know, they do all this stuff, and you have to maintain these personalities all separately. So maybe you have a blog, you know, maybe you tweet on Twitter, you know, maybe you write product reviews on services like Yelp or on Amazon.com or whatever. You post photos to Flickr, you know, you're all over the place, right? I mean, I think a lot of the people listening to this, you and I both, we have accounts everywhere. And rather than try to compete with, say, Facebook and MySpace and get into social networking, especially, what they've decided to do is just open up Windows Live so that this stuff all interoperates. And that's actually really exciting. And so one of the ways that this works is you have something like your Windows Live homepage, which, you know, Windows Live Home or home.live.com, which today is sort of your basic portal. There's nothing really all that exciting going on there right now. But in the future, this will be your point for linking all of that stuff into one place and then deciding how you're going to share it out with your contacts, which can be friends, family members, just people you know casually. And you can create groups and share things differently. You can determine how you want to share things with the world or not to share things with the world. It's all up to you. But the point behind all this stuff is you have this group of people that you're following, and you have a group of people who are following you, and you can determine what information gets shared. And it will all happen automatically through this one point. So, for example, all those things I just mentioned, you know, you update Facebook, you write a review on Yelp, you post to Twitter a couple of times. Optionally, all that stuff can be posted through their sort of what's new feed, sort of like I think Friendster or something like that might be a sort of a technical example, but this is obviously a friendlier kind of consumer oriented.
Or like your Facebook status would be.
Yeah, but it aggregates everything, right?
Right. You know,
in other words, the way Facebook works right now is people can write these sort of mini applications that work within Facebook, and they can cause it to, you know, pull things from other services. So it's possible, right? I mean, this is the type of stuff that works. But Microsoft has worked with over 50 of these companies to get this really deep integration going through Windows Live.
Yeah, FriendFeed does that. Jaiku does that. There are a lot of these. So they're aggregating your live stream is what they call it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I can use that now?
No. So this stuff is all coming over the next few months. So what they're saying is they're going to roll it out. You know, the way they rolled out the new version of Hotmail, for example, which is also being updated in the future to support other features. They're updating all of the services. So these integration pieces will all be applied wherever they make sense. So, for example, in Windows Live Messenger, which is Microsoft's instant messaging application, in the new beta version, there's a feed at the bottom of the main window called What's New. And right now, the What's New feed just has stuff that's new with your instant messaging contacts. But in the RC release that will be coming soon, it will be open to all of those other services. Mm. So I actually turn it off because I don't really think that you know, seeing what's new with, you know, what people have changed their status or whatever, and I don't really care. But, you know, once it's open to a much wider range of services, it actually becomes a lot more interesting.
Well, news, for instance, it could be almost like your news reader.
Yeah, well, my
podcast sort of like listener.
Yeah, well, it's like a news reader for friends.
Right, you know? But if I put out a new podcast, it'd show up in that stream.
It would just show up in that stream, exactly, yeah. And the thing about this that's interesting to me is I've actually spent a lot of time, probably 2 months ago or so, you know, creating this awful-looking page on my website where here are all the RSS feeds for all the different things I do. It's really stupid, you know, and hopefully if this comes to get, you know, maybe I could do something like this in the future. Who knows? We'll look at that. But if you go down the list of services that they have, a lot of new services and then a lot of updated services, you know. So, for example, some of the new services, some of the more obvious ones, like Windows Live Photos, right? A photo sharing site where you can do people tagging and commenting, and, you know, the What's New feed will go through there. So when people who are in your network have posted new photos, those updates will appear automatically on that site. You can share albums and all that stuff. On the Windows Live Photo Gallery side, which is the photo application that's part of Windows Live Essentials, they're adding a feature based on Windows Live Sync, right, which is the new version of Photo Folder Share, where if you have logged into this application on a PC and then you log into the application on a different PC, it will automatically synchronize your photo libraries across PCs using that sync technology that's under the covers, the stuff that will eventually be the Live Mesh sync platform.
I'm using Live Mesh on the Mac, and it's doing a great job. It's like a
it works really
fantastic.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but this is an interesting use for it, because if you think about the way that Live Mesh works right now, you have to manually go in and say, okay, here's a folder. I want to share this thing out, or I want to synchronize this thing out. And then you go to another computer and you say, okay, now I want to get that folder and I'm going to put it somewhere in my file system and I'm going to synchronize those things up. And that's okay. But, you know, on my computer, the computers that I use, you have a documents folder like you do on the Mac.
Right.
My documents folder has all kinds of stuff in it. So I don't want to synchronize the whole folder because it has things like virtual machines, which are multiple.
Yeah, that's the last thing you want to sync. Yeah.
It has, you know, instant message receive files. It's got weird folders from different applications.
Right.
I don't want the whole thing shared out. So I've sort of manually gone in and created two folders inside of documents that are the things that I share out. One has the articles that I'm working on right now. And the other one is, I just call it docs. And these are sort of core docs. You know, it's where I have my, you know, the news articles I write every day. It's where I have the podcast topics that I create for this podcast and a couple of other sort of critical documents that I need every day. So those things get synchronized out. But that's, you know, I did the work, right? In other words,
you have
I had
to go there. File by file and say, copy this one, copy, you know,
right.
Synchronize. But once you do it, it continues to do that automatically.
It does do it automatically. But the nice thing about the new version of Windows Live Photo Gallery that's coming down the road is that synchronizing your folder library between PCs is something really valuable, right? It's something
that you bet.
You could set up. So it will just do this for you automatically if you want it to, obviously. Between your PC. So all you have to do is install Photo Gallery, log into your Windows Live ID, and if you've already shared out your Photo Gallery on a different, your photo library on a different PC, it will automatically synchronize them up. So I think that and, you know, many of the other, their new services, like I said, new features in the applications, it's really cool. I mean, it seems like they're bringing it together in a very interesting way.
Now, they've increased the size of SkyDrive to 25 gigs. Is that true?
Yeah. So,
that's huge.
Right. So SkyDrive is their online storage service.
And that's still free. But does Mesh use it? That doesn't increase my Mesh sync size.
No, but it will. See, that's the thing. All of this, we're all moving to this consolidated storage future, and that's what this is. In other words, for right now, they've said, look, we know you're going to need a lot of storage for photos. We're not ready to start offering the subscription pricing and all this stuff, so we'll just bump this thing up to something ludicrous and, you know, enjoy it.
Hey, but, I'll pay anything if I can stop staring at that girl flirting with me at the top of the page. Can we get rid of that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what that is? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? That ad for True? It drives me crazy. It also seems somewhat slightly inappropriate.
Yeah, so here's the problem. On Hotmail, you can pay $19.95 a year to get rid of the ads.
Right.
And it actually gets rid of the ads on almost everything on Windows Live, but not everything. And one of the things it doesn't get rid of the ads on, and I'm hoping they change this now that it's moving into sort of a release candidate phase, is on Windows Live Calendar, which is technically part of Hotmail, that ad doesn't go away even if you're paying for it. Drives me crazy. I don't know. Yeah. So
I see the same ad on Dig. It's obviously part of the Microsoft ad network, but it's just, first of all, they're talking up the wrong tree. Since I'm happily married, I have no interest in this flirting girl. And it kind of bugs me. It's a little sexy and I don't want to see it. I'd like to get rid of her.
I will actually mention that.
Can you tell Microsoft, please? It just, you know, it's like, I don't care if Summer Cusp, 22 years old, wants me to stop, stare, and flirt. I don't want to. And every time I go to live, I have to see her. I'm sorry. I'm being whiny. But
No. You're right. And especially if you're paying for it.
Right. And I'd be willing. And that's why, I pay for Hotmail Pro or whatever it is. I pay for Yahoo Mail Pro. I want to get rid of those ads. So maybe that's their secret strategy.
Well, sure. Make it less annoying. You know, pay money. That's a fair bargain.
And I'm sure they make money on True. The True is this dating service that's kind of mildly sexy. And I think that it's
mildly sexy.
I don't think it's appropriate for an older man like me to have to look at her. And what if you're a woman? Does it know you're a woman and give you a guy flirting with you?
I don't know.
How smart is it? That's my question for you, Paul.
It doesn't seem very smart.
anyway, I am excited. I mean, I think, for instance, things like having 25 gigabytes of storage is fantastic.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on here. And it's hard to talk about it all because it just comes out in a huge blurt of information. But, I mean, this Hotmail stuff going on there. Giving free pop access to everyone via Hotmail now. They're giving pop aggregation so you can use Hotmail as your central inbox for all of your email accounts if you want to. There's all kinds of stuff. So I'll be, over the next few days, publishing a bunch. I've already published a bunch of stuff. I've got a lot more coming. There's new applications, new services. You know, the sync stuff is finally happening. A lot of stuff going on there. So it's really exciting. And the only thing, you know, that is probably going to be pushed back is that Windows Live Movie Maker. Which they had said earlier, it's just not as far along, and that will probably...
So will that be an online version of Movie Maker?
It's not an online version, but it's a version that you'll download.
Much like you do Windows Live Mail.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I just noticed this today, it finally occurred to me, I was writing up this stuff, and I was reading about something they had written about Windows Live Calendar, and it occurred to me, you know, they've talked a lot about how they're getting rid of certain applications in Windows 7. They haven't mentioned if they're replacing Windows Calendar with Windows Live Calendar.
Oh.
And
boy, that would be nice. I mean, that's one of the reasons I use Google Calendar.
Yeah, and I think they are because Windows Calendar is, in fact, not in Windows 7. Or at least it's not in the M3 version. So if you downloaded Windows Live Mail, that includes the calendar application.
And to have a sync with Outlook Calendar would be so nice.
Well, you can do that as well. Office Outlook connector, I think it's called.
Yeah, and then that goes, and so then I have a live calendar that's web enabled. I can see on the web at any time. I can sync with other machines.
Yep. You can share it with your groups.
Yeah, I mean
there's all kinds of
that's
stuff.
That's where I think Google might be eating their lunch. I mean, people use, and I think Google Calendar is vulnerable because it's clunky. And, you know, getting it to work with Outlook, for instance, is not as easy and things like that. It's just clunky. And so if it were kind of all seamless with Office, I think there are a lot of people would use it.
Yeah, I think so, too.
That's what they're going. They're trying to do. They're saying, let's provide, you know, applications in the cloud that are competitive with Google's.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Alternatively, those sort of richer local applications that run right on Windows and look better and perform better and so forth. You can have it either way,
right,
you know,
right.
And those applications are all free, which is cool. So
very exciting. So now if I go to live.com now, some of this, yeah, I will see, some of it I'll see later.
Well,
actually, yeah, if I go to live.com, I get that silly live search with the guy throwing the net. But if I go to
so the
home.live.com, right, is where I want to go.
Home.live.com will eventually become that nice front end portal type thing. Right now, there's sort of a basic portal there.
Right.
If you want to see what the new stuff looks like, you can go to download.live.com. They've got a preview up there.
Right.
And then I think that everything we just discussed, I don't think any of it is available now. If you were to go to SkyDrive right now,
still be 10
I suspect.
Gigs.
I think I'd have to go look at it, but I don't believe that any of the new stuff has rolled out other than, you know, the first version of the Hotmail update.
Right.
Yeah. So it still says 5 gig on SkyDrive. I just checked.
Right.
But, you know, the UIs are all changing. It's going to be, you know, every one of these services will be much nicer looking. You know, the capacity is going up. The inter service and inter product sharing and integration is going way up. It's cool. I mean, in fact, there's so much stuff here. It's hard. I was trying to figure out a way to, you know, even just to write about it. It's really difficult. There's so much stuff there. It's going to take numerous articles just to sort of express it all. I mean, there is a lot going on here.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
I like seeing the progress. And as you know, I've always thought that Live was the most interesting stuff happening at Microsoft. And now that it's kind of merging into Windows 7, it's even more exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting.
But, you know me. The most exciting thing from my point of view is enterprise computing, particularly small business server.
Jeez. Wow.
That's
well, I'll tell you,
any
I'll
news
tell you
there?
There is. Well, yeah, there is some news there. So should I just buzz you when I'm done with this thing?
I'm a very bad man. No, I've got a game here. I'll just play my game until you're done.
Well, I'll make this one quick.
No, I'm just kidding.
No,
everybody wants to know. Everybody's dying to know what's the latest with small business.
There's not much to say other than that small business server and essential business server, which is the medium-sized business server, are both generally available now. You can buy them, you can license them, you can do whatever you want with them. But and they're both fine.
What's the difference? Are they simpler features?
Yeah,
than?
Very similar features, very similar administration consoles. The big difference is that Windows Small Business Server obviously is aimed at small businesses. It's designed to be installed on two servers. It scales up to a certain point, and
right,
you know, you kind of hit the end of the road there. Essential Business Server is a much more complex and also more capable system. It's much more like the enterprise products. Requires at least three servers. They have to be x64. It spreads, you know, your enterprise services out to different servers, which is probably the right way to do things. But I think the problem with these products, and it's weird for me to say this because I've always been a fan of Small Business Server. I think those guys really know what they're doing. And in fact, I've been saying for years, they create such excellent front ends to the capabilities that why isn't this stuff available in the mainstream server products, you know? Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of email from enterprise administrators who say, you know, God, I saw this thing in Small Business Server. You know, why don't we have anything this simple?
Interesting.
The problem is it's 2008. And the truth is, I think for small businesses especially,
I don't want to run a server.
Yeah, locally,
run a server.
Local on-site servers.
No. Well, I don't have an IT department.
That's
going to maintain
complex.
That?
Well, they have a partner ecosystem where these people can remotely administer it for you and all that stuff. But you know what?
I want a hosted solution.
That's
what we're doing with Exchange. That's what we're doing with Exchange. I'm not running an Exchange server. We use a hosted Exchange.
Right. Now, if you think about all the stuff that these products offer, I mean, you can. Some of the stuff is obvious. You know, email, like you said, got to be up in the cloud.
Yeah.
SharePoint. Up in
the cloud. And I get SharePoint with my Exchange. Yeah. I get it with my.
Why would you want that?
Right.
But there are things you do need locally, right? You need the ability to run server applications that may be particular to your business. You need storage.
Backup,
You may need SQL Server
right.
for certain things, depending on your business. So I think that if you look at Small Business Server and you look at Home Server and you look at the things that it does compared to these other products, I think the future of this market is for Small Business Server especially, and I gave them this recommendation and I got sort of a knowing smile, by the way, so it may be coming, but there needs to be an even lower end version of Small Business Server, or at least an alternative where you can specify which of the services you want to be hosted and which you want to be local. And it will cost less up front, but there might be a subscription. Well, there will be a subscription cost involved because they're hosting your email and or your SharePoint and or whatever else. And of course, with Windows Azure, they could host SQL Server as well. So I think that the future of this stuff, and it's sort of unfortunate timing for these guys, because I think it should be there now, but it's just not ready yet, is that this stuff will go to the hosted services model. Mm-hmm. So maybe there'll be a small business server 2008 R2 product. I don't know. They've never said this to me, but hopefully in that time frame, a year and a half from now or less, you know, preferably next year would be ideal, hosted version of this thing.
I would like to see that. I'd be much more interested in that. And as I said, you know, having an Exchange server just makes a lot of sense. And why should, you know, I don't want to run a server.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it makes it hard to write about it because I don't want to go into this like a jerk and say, oh, good job, Microsoft. You released this at exactly the wrong time. I mean, the truth is, you know, these are excellent products. I mean, they're better than anything they've had before and all that stuff. But like I said, I mean, it's 2008 and it's a tough time. You know, website hosting would be the other one. So website hosting is the one piece in Small Business Server where you can integrate with Office Live, Small Business, and put your website up in the cloud. Fine. There's no reason to have a web server in your real estate office or whatever your business is. But that's the only thing. You know, they need email, especially SharePoint. It needs to be out of there. So yeah. I hope they do. Yeah. I hope they do it soon.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they will.
That's all I have to say.
So the user now, see, now you got me intrigued. The user interface
we're done. We're moving
okay.
on.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
Okay. User interface is easier. They have like big buttons
if you're familiar with the way Windows Home Server works, yes, Leo, they have big
buttons. It's more like Home Server.
It is very much like Home Server.
Oh.
It's that sort of tabbed UI. It's extensible, so third parties can write applications, you know, that run on the
cool.
server and then integrate into the management tools. Really
so
nice.
It's actually somewhere in between Home Server and Server 2008, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's kind of neat. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Is Windows Mobile making a comeback? I don't have a segue for that.
I was going to say, you're usually an expert at this.
I don't have a segue for that.
Maybe worst segue ever.
It's like when the DJ takes the needle, goes right across the record.
Actually, what it reminds me of is when you're in a really bad presentation and the guy just reads the slides to you.
Yes, it is. I read the slide.
Whereas I sort of say, and I'm not a good presenter at all, but I at least have the common sense to say, I assume you can all read this.
these big words behind me, just read those. I'll shut up.
I'll shut up for a moment and you can
read
sort of
my slide.
It over.
As you can see from this slide, is Windows Mobile making a comeback?
Maybe it is.
You and I both are not fans of Windows Mobile. And the storm's going to be out the 21st now. We finally have confirmation of that. So BlackBerry's got its new OS out.
Right.
You know, the iPhone's out. G1's out.
The BlackBerry Storm looks interesting. On the other hand, I would be a little reticent to purchase the 1.0 version of a BlackBerry touchscreen product personally. You know?
No, you're probably right. Yeah.
Maybe the next version. You know? I think the Google Android phone is another example of that where you just know the next version is going to be way better.
I can tell you right now, the battery life is so stinkeroo that I'm not using it.
Yeah.
And that's typical of a Rev 1 product. In fact, it was an iPhone problem until they updated the firmware.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. So we'll see how that goes. But there have been a couple of things recently that have made me wonder about Windows Mobile. The first one was that rumors of a Windows Mobile 6.5 version sort of surfaced, and then Microsoft confirmed them. They are, in fact, working on a 6.5 release. So
cool. There
will be an update to Windows Mobile before Windows Mobile 7, which has been delayed now a couple of times. And it is itself rumored to be maybe a completely different system, you know, than the current versions. And I hope that that's what's going on.
7, not 6.5.
Right.
So 6.5 would be just an update, and now that leaves room for 7 to be something completely different.
Yeah, if you look out at the Windows Mobile landscape today and you want to pick a device that stands out from the other devices, typically what you're going to be looking at is something where they literally replace the user interface with something of maybe of their own design. Or in Windows Mobile 6.1, Microsoft created that alternative homepage, which is actually very cool, sort of the sliding panel version of the UI, which is nice. The problem with all of these things is that eventually you actually have to get into Windows Mobile itself, right? They're just they're like a little sheen on top of the mess that is underneath. And that's too bad. But there are some new devices that look cool. There's a Sony Xperia, which has been available. Sony Ericsson Xperia has been available for a while now outside of the United States, but it's coming to the U.S. this month, although I'm still waiting to hear which carriers will have it. And then there's something called the HTC Fuse, which looks really cool. And that's available right now on AT&T, which, of course, is the network I'm stuck with, thanks to Apple and the iPhone. So that's something I may take a look at. I need to read a little bit more about it and see if it's really as good as it looks. But it's one of those, you know, slide-out keyboard type things, and it looks really interesting. It's got a nice-looking UI and so forth. So, but the one thing, you know, there were, unfortunately, these were since proven to be fake, but there were some supposed Windows Mobile 6.5 screenshots that appeared on the web the other day. And what was interesting about one of them, and I thought this now in retrospect, I think this is a fairly obvious idea, is it's basically the Zune UI, but on a Windows Mobile device. And if you think about it, that's actually how the Windows Mobile sliding panels UI works, right? Where you can go up and down, but also left and right. And I think that makes a lot of sense for a mobile device because it already works in the Zune. You know, why not?
I loved it on
like
the Zune. That was the feature I liked most about the Zune update.
Yeah, and it can be very visual. It doesn't have to be a text list, right? It, you know, it could work very much like that sliding panels UI, right, where it's in fact highly visual. So,
and I guess all Windows Mobile devices kind of have that four-way jog thing. Dying.
Yeah, that's a very right. This is a very basic UI idea in a way, up, down, left, right. We can all do that. I mean, that's something any device could basically handle. So I hope that that's where they're going with this. And of course, you know, the other update that I just have to sort of laugh, but they're working on a version of Internet Explorer 6, you know, that browser that was released 7.5 years ago for Windows Mobile, you know, to bring it up to speed, which is so sad. But unfortunately, in the Windows Mobile world, if you've ever used the browser, this will in fact be a major update. So I guess we'll see. So I don't know. I guess I don't know. I'm going to keep following it. I'll look at it.
We'll give it a chance.
You never know. I might pop up one week and say, "Hey, I bought an HTC Fuse or something."
It's
got to be better than this thing I've been using. I have a Samsung Blackjack 2, which is a very typical, you know, integrated thumbpad keyboard thing. I don't know. No great shakes, but we'll see.
Good. I always like seeing new phones. It's always fun. You never know what you're going
to
get.
I hate this market, though, because it makes it really hard to test things. Because I will meet with these guys, and they'll show me the new software. They'll show it on some prototype device. I get kind of excited about it, and I say, "Well, how can I test this?" And they're like, "Oh, you can't test it." Okay, so what are we talking about here? Well, when will this be out so that I can't test it? 6 to 9 months, I see. So you've created this system and it's done, but no one can use it for 6 to 9 months. Seems like a really good business model. You know, at least with computer software, they can hand you something or you can download it and it works right away. For some reason with Windows Mobile, it just doesn't work that way.
Now, did Microsoft, somebody in the chat room, J.C. Calhoun is saying that they bought the Sidekick OS from Danger.
Danger, that's right.
They bought Danger. So I wonder if maybe 7 will have some features, Sidekick-like features.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I don't know what that would mean. But.
Right. I think that a lot of the stuff that Danger was doing is sort of common now on a lot of those slide-out keyboard-type devices. I think that was the thing they pioneered, wasn't it? The notion of a keyboard that was the size of the entire device, and the screen would pop up from there. And
well, exactly. And in fact, the guy that invented all that and went to work for Google and did the Android operating system. So
right. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, for right now, my understanding is that they still release, you know, Danger Sidekick hardware, right? And I'm sure they still sell whatever carriers, but who knows the future of that is.
Hey, let's take a break. We want to talk about Gears of War 2. I presume that you have played it. The new Call of Duty is out, too. We're going to talk a little bit about gaming. Before we do that, though, I want to mention our good friends at GoToMeeting, GoToMeeting.com. This is that great meeting system that I use and I recommend everybody give a try to. It's the best way, frankly, to do online meetings. There are other online meeting solutions. You might even have heard us talk about one a moment ago. But frankly, this is the one you want to use. It's easy. It's affordable. It's fast. I'm going to give it to you for free for the next 30 days. Give it a try. GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. Before I'm even done with this ad, you'll have it installed and up and running. And then whenever you've got a conference call coming up, you can send a note ahead of time. Or even while you're on the conference call, say, hey, go to GoToMeeting.com. I want to show you this. They go to GoToMeeting.com. You say, enter the meeting ID and, you know, 170349 or whatever it is. And they enter that ID. Suddenly, they're seeing your computer, your desktop, right on their screen. And so you say, here, let me show you the drawings or the models, or let me show you the website. Here's how we were thinking it should look. Or let me do the PowerPoint presentation for you. Read that slide. Is Windows Mobile making a comeback? See that slide there? That's how you could do it with GoToMeeting.com. I use it to rehearse speeches. I use it to collaborate. You can even use it for training. If you've got some software, for instance, you're selling and you want to train your clients, they don't even have to have the software running. You can literally say, okay, here's how it works. Now you take control, and they're using it on your machine from their machine. It's an amazing product. Try it free for 30 days, a month of unlimited online meetings free. Go to GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly and give it a try today. From the folks who do Go to My PC, the folks at Citrix, they know remote access. They know meetings. So they know how to do this. They're the best. GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. We thank them so much for their support of the Windows Weekly program. So I'm thinking, when did Gears of War 2 come to the Therott household?
Friday.
And it's, let's see, we're recording this on a Thursday. You've had a week. Oh, you're done with it.
Oh, yeah. I finished it on Saturday.
Is it a short game or you just play hard?
No, it's just, well, I played through it on the normal mode. I didn't dumb it down or ratchet it up, but I did play through it. And
really for you, and I think for most people, it's really about the multiplayer. It's not so much about the single player.
Yeah, and actually the multiplayer is good on that one. Multiplayer in the original Gears of War was terrible. It was absolutely terrible, but it's decent on this one.
Not great. Not Call of Duty quality.
No, not even close.
Yeah.
No, Call of Duty came out on Tuesday.
Yeah. Did you finish that one too?
Yeah, I finished that one yesterday.
Now, this is the one with World War II weapons.
I thought that was going to be a little disappointing. You know, Call of Duty 4 was certainly the best of those games and the best selling and so forth. And going back to World War II for Call of Duty 5, I thought was a mistake. But I have to say, it's not just the Japanese stuff. It's basically the end of the two war campaigns. So it's the end of the war in the Pacific, but also the end of the war for the Russians in Berlin.
Oh, that would be interesting. See, that would be fun.
It's really good, and it's shorter. That game is actually much shorter than Gears of War 2, the single player campaign. But what Call of Duty has going for it is it's Call of Duty, right? So the online component is exactly like Call of Duty 4, but with improvements. So it's more colorful. It makes it more obvious, you know, who's the enemy and who's the good guy and all that stuff. But they fixed some of the stuff, and this will only make sense to people who play this game. But Call of Duty 4 online is awesome. But the one big thing that it just drives me crazy is you're shooting someone, right? So let's say you hit him and you hit him and you hit him and you hit him and you hit him.
Yeah.
And normally if you kill a guy, you get 10 points. But some other guy swoops by, fires a single shot.
I hate that when that happens.
He gets the kill.
You softened him up.
Well, in previous Call of Duty games, you were just out of luck, right? You got nothing.
Right.
Now in Call of Duty 4, what they added was the notion of an assist. So even if you did most of the damage, you got 2 points. Right, instead of 10. And 2 points drives me crazy when I play.
You'd rather get nothing.
That's what I say. 2 points insulting. Is an insult. That's an insult. You take it back. I don't want the 2 points. That stinks. But what they do in Call of Duty World of War, Call of Duty 5, which is perfect. This is exactly what I've been asking for. Basically, any kill is worth 10 points. The guy who does the most damage gets most of the points.
Oh, that's good. That's
so you could get 2, 4, 6, 8, or 10 points. Kill.
You know what? That by itself makes it a huge difference.
Now, in the example, it's huge. I know this sounds like such a stupid gamer thing, but seriously, you're nailing some guy.
Yeah.
Someone else swoops in and gets the kill. He gets 2 points. You get 8.
It's like when your wife asks you to open a jar, and you turn it. It doesn't open, and then your neighbor comes over and says, "Let me try." And he opens it right away. Loosened it.
I started it.
I loosened it.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And what a weird comparison. But okay. That's exactly what it is.
So, and I feel the same way. They shouldn't get 10 points. And you should. 2 points is a slap in the face. Give me what I did.
I say that all the time. I'm actually infamous with the guys I play with because I yell that all the time. That's an insult. You take that back.
Your 2 points and shove it up your carbine.
It's like a slap to the face,
Yeah.
But anyway, so they fixed that. And then The other thing I'd say, you know, Call of Duty 4, fantastic online game, but the one thing you realize once you move to the new version is Call of Duty 4 is really dark, and it's really, it's kind of a blue-gray sheen to it. The whole thing is dark.
Yes.
And then in Call of Duty 5, all of a sudden, it's just an explosion of color. It's a, it's
yes,
a much
because
more...
Yes, because the rubble of Berlin was so very colorful.
Well, no, it's not. It's not the setting so much as the guys who designed the game just said, let's make it prettier.
It was a little grim.
Just, yeah.
Gears of War is too, though. I mean, in fact, that's the, that's kind of the trend nowadays.
It is, but actually, that's true. You know, Gears of War, the original one, was all gray. There was a PS3 game called Resistance Fall of Man, which they just updated, which was all brown, you know. And then Call of Duty 4 was all blue-gray. So Gears of War 2, they've actually somewhat colorized it. It's more like they're very pale colors, but they've added a lot of colors. In fact, you can download the old multiplayer maps for the new version. And they're colorized. It's like watching one of those colorized movies,
Turner classic Gears of War.
That's exactly what it looks like. You know, it's like here's the same dull gray level, but it's kind of green now.
Pretty.
We'll pretend this stuff has grown on it or something. You know? We'll make it a little green. So that's fine.
Weird trend, and I think Gears of War, in my mind, the first one kind of started this, where there was all kind of a monochrome palette. Metal Gear Solid is like that. Assassin's Creed is like that, where there's just this kind of. And it's a little grim.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, you don't want it to be candy color, but...
No, it reminds me of a lot of modern movies have a color sheen to them.
Yes.
Because they can sort of digitally enhance them. And there are movies that do it right, like Oh Brother, Wherefore Art Thou, whatever that movie is, which does a fantastic job. In fact, so fantastic, if you haven't seen it, I don't know if we ever discussed this, but go and look at on the DVD, they have the special features. It's not even clear that that's what they did to the movie. And then you go back and you realize this was all methodically done to make it look like a period piece.
Yes.
Very effective. But a lot of modern movies have sort of, they're very blue cast or they have you can tell they've been digitally changed. And it just, I don't know, we're going to look back on this era of movies and I think of video games in some ways as well. And you'll be able to date them to this decade because that's what we're doing. You know, we're digitally enhancing everything when they don't necessarily need to be enhanced in that fashion.
Right. You know, I was watching The Godfather re-enhancement that just came out on Blu-ray, and it has a yellow sheen to it. In fact, the cinematographer did that when he developed it to give it that period piece, to make it feel like it was that, you know, just post-war era. So
and he did it manually with film, right?
He dipped the film in a solution. And so in a way, it's a time-honored technique for kind of giving a feeling. And in a way, it's kind of neat that the game manufacturers are sensitive to that. And, you know, instead of using the bright colored palettes that they might be tempted to.
It could be overdone.
They don't want to look like Super Mario.
But there are some games. There's some sequences in the Call of Duty games where it's a blown out city and it's pouring rain. It's sort of like that scene in Saving Private Ryan, you know, where there's a sniper up in the tower. And it's a very effective visual look.
Right.
And it helps create the feeling of what's going on in the game. But, you know, a little, I don't know, you play a game like Gears of War for 12 hours straight or whatever. It really wears on you.
I mean, you feel like you got dust on your tongue. It's just
it's so dark and it's so gray.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So of the two, Gears of War 2 or Call of Duty 5, which it sounds like you like COD 5.
It's a tough call. They're both awesome. I would say this. Gears of War 2 is the better single player game. It's also longer and you'll probably get more. The story is fantastic. Call of Duty World of War is vastly superior as a multiplayer game. And because the single-player game is so excellent in that game as well, I would say overall, Call of Duty is the better game.
All right. Did you give away that Zune?
I did. Actually, that reminds me. I also have to talk about the book giveaway stuff. So, somebody won the game. Actually, the guy who won, coincidentally, I played on and off online over the course of the weekend, and then I stayed up late on Sunday night.
We should explain what's going on. This is a great idea for a contest.
Right. So I announced on the site that I had Microsoft gave me a Zune 120 Gears of War 2 Special Edition, right, to give away. So I decided I announced it on my gamer tag, announced on the site. Basically, I'll be online, play with me online, play against me online, whatever, play cooperatively with me, it doesn't matter. See me online, and you have to contact me through the Xbox. You can't do it on email. You have to actually be playing the game. You have to have the game and play the game. And
that's fair because if you have to be a fan if you want this Zune.
Yeah, I thought it'd be cool,
it's not a fan.
Yeah, a little different.
Yeah.
So I played, you know, 3 days straight, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I didn't play. I mean, I didn't play online the entire time. Obviously, I kind of jumped in and out. And on Sunday night, I decided I'll stay up until midnight and I'll play this game online. And I was so tired. I was awful. The guy who won, it was funny. He was actually on my team in the last game I played, and I think I had one kill the entire game or something. it happened to be that guy. I did a random, you know, I think I had 47 people, 43 people maybe, somewhere there. And then same thing I did with the other giveaways. I, you know, generate a random number.
Right.
He was whatever number he was, and it ended up being this guy, Chad Smith from Vancouver, British Columbia. So you really can win if you're from Canada.
Oh, that's good. Are you going to mail it all the way to Canada?
Yep. Yeah, we're going to ship it to Canada.
All the way?
Well, you know, it's funny. Canada is very close to where I live. Not Vancouver, but
right,
you know, Canada.
I was going to say, it'd be a simple thing to mail it to Toronto.
Well, as my wife noted to me the other day, shipping to Canada is dramatically more expensive than shipping to
that's
the United States.
That's because of the tariffs.
Yeah. And then in this case, it's packaged up. I haven't sent it yet, but, you know, it's worth almost $300, so I'm going to have to insure it, and God knows what it's going to cost, but it's okay. It's fine. This is, you know.
If you want us to defray the cost, we'll be glad to help.
No. I appreciate that. Thank you. All but right. One thing I need to figure out for the book giveaways is I want to do some international book giveaways, and those are even more expensive. And even when you ship them, you literally via boat, right? The slow way to ship internationally, the package is delivered on a boat. So it arrives weeks down the line.
So when they say slow boat to China, they really mean it.
Oh, it literally is a slow boat and probably goes through China, even if it's being delivered to France. So I will figure that out, I promise. But in the meantime, I think I mentioned I have more books to give away. So this Saturday, let me look at the date so there's no confusion. I'm going to do it Saturday, not Sunday, because I've gotten complaints from people who had to go to church on Sunday morning, for example.
There's people celebrate Shabbat on Saturday. You got to rotate.
So we've done the previous weekend giveaways on Sunday. This week will be on Saturday.
The 15th. Okay.
Saturday, November 15th from 1 p.m. to 1:15 p.m. Eastern time. Email me at therot@gmail.com. Tell me you'd like a copy of the book. Don't ask me any other questions or mention anything else because I'm not going to read the emails. Please. Well, people do that. You know, no, I would like a copy. And by the way, I have a problem with my Dell laptop. Yeah. I'm not going to see that, so please don't do that. I'll do the same thing I did. I'll give away 10 this time. I will also announce this on the site. And unfortunately, this one as well, U.S. and Canada only. I apologize. And I'll announce... Well, I'll get back to the people who won via email like I did before, and then I'll announce the winners on the site probably on Sunday.
Cool. And you're giving away?
10 copies of Windows Vista Secrets SP1 Edition.
Excelente.
My almost obsolete book.
So, very cool. No, it's far from obsolete. Many, many people. More people are using Vista now than ever before. Which would be a pretty safe bet, even if they sold more copy.
There you go.
So, what was I going to ask you?
That's like saying the world population is greater than it's ever been, so there are more potential readers of this book than there ever have been.
Exactly my point. Oh, I was going to ask you about PC versions. Is there a PC version of Call of Duty World at War?
There is.
Okay, so we could play on the PC.
There's no PC version of Gears of War 2. And there might not be. Last time I think we knew going in there was going to be one eventually. This time I believe I've read that they're saying there won't be. It wouldn't surprise me to see them eventually do it. But as is the case with the Halo games, it's console first and then we'll see what happens on the PC. But yes, you can get Call of Duty right now on the PC.
That must mean they sell more console games by far.
I think the reason I believe they're not going to do a PC version this time is they said that last time they knew they were doing the PC version, and it caused them to do things differently.
Change the
and
console.
It wasn't as optimized as it could be for the console. So this time they said, look, we're just going to make it for the console. It will be the best possible experience. You can tell it performs a lot better than the original did. And one of the things that kind of stinks about the original Gears of War is if you play it on the PC, there's additional levels that you don't get on the console, and they've never gone back and made those available on the Xbox, which is too bad. So,
Soulless Swede says they also expressed concern about piracy on the PC side.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
It's always easier to steal a game on a PC than it is on a console.
Yeah, and I don't really follow this stuff anymore, but I know with previous disc-based console systems, you know, the piracy was pretty rampant because they figured out a way to crack those games. I know on the Sega Dreamcast, for example, it was very easy to copy.
It's easy to copy a game, yeah.
I don't know that anyone's broken that on the Xbox. I've never seen anything like that.
On the original Xbox, you know, if you mod, you put a mod chip in, you were
I mean, on the 360 specifically.
I don't think anybody's done on the 360, no. In fact,
I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't believe so.
It's interesting because the Xbox was cracked very quickly by Bunny Huang, and with Microsoft's tacit permission. And Bunny was of the opinion that what Microsoft was doing was seeing where the vulnerabilities were. And so that when they came out with Xbox 360, they could make it without those vulnerabilities.
Well, they have an interesting new tack they can take now, because if you get caught with a modded Xbox 360 or cheating in any way, they could just cut you off of Xbox Live. And, you know, let's be honest. I mean, that's where people want to be on the 360, is they want to play games against people online. You know, I've always been fascinated by the notion that Call of Duty 4 and now again Call of Duty World at War, they have 1,000 points of achievements they can give out, and none of them are given out for online play. All the achievements are single player, because they don't have to do it for online play, because people are just going to want to do that.
Right.
And Call of Duty 4, to this day, I wouldn't be surprised to discover, is probably, you know, the single most popular online game that's ever been on Xbox Live, and they don't have to induce people to play, you know, with achievements. They'll just show up and play.
Oh, I got to correct myself. Mm-hmm. Xbox 360 was cracked in 2006.
Well, but are there, in other words, you make copies of the games and distribute them to people?
Well, it looks like at the time you could, and then it also looks like Microsoft may have put out a patch. Microsoft has released a patch.
Well, that's the thing. So imagine you could make a
copy
of Call of
Duty. You lose your Xbox Live, that's the thing, as you said.
Not only that, but I mean, one thing Microsoft can do with the 360 that maybe they abuse a little bit, but if, say, there's a crack for Call of Duty and it allows you to cheat in some way or even make a copy of the game, well, they push out an update, and they basically say, if you want to get online and play this game, you have to install the update. You don't have a choice.
Right.
And that's the way the system works. Yep. So, I mean, I think on an ongoing basis, there's no real...
Well, and that would explain the popularity from the game manufacturer's point of view of making online games, because that kind of eliminates the problem with piracy, basically.
Right, yeah. Right.
All right, we're going to
Not that there aren't a lot of losers online, by the way.
So what, you know, I'm going to go back and look at your gamer tag. You have a lot of it. By the way, a very handsome picture of you. That's very attractive. Is that from Gears of War? Hey, what is that? Looks like a Metal Gear Solid. Who is that?
Oh, that's the guy. That's the Gears of War guy.
That's the Gears of War guy. Yeah. With a little hipster tag right there.
The hipster tag.
And you have 22,438 points. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's okay.
Well, I go through periods where I don't get any, and then, you know, new games come out, and, you know, I get a bunch of points on the new games, and then I'll be quiet again for a while.
You got 5 stars, man. 5 stars.
Well, you just have to have a heartbeat to have a 5-star.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it just don't be an idiot, and you're fine.
Let's take a break. We're going to come up in just a bit. We're going to come back with the software of the week. A program I think is fantastic, but actually we have two of them for you. Something a must have for Windows users. And our Vistas tip, which will give you, amazingly enough, Windows 7 functionality. But first, we want to mention our friends at Audible.com. This show brought to you by Audible. Audible's the kind of the fantastic library of the internet, a place you can go and choose from tens of thousands of audiobooks, wonderful books. Audible has just spoiled me. I love listening to books now. And in fact, it's always my preferred way. I was looking for a copy of Conscience of a Liberal, a new Paul Krugman book. And first thing I do is say, well, is there an Audible version? And there is. And so I got that, but now I have to get my friends the hardcover version because they're not Audible members. This is why you got to join Audible. Audible.com/Windows. You can, by the way, once your friends are members, give them gifts. I send Audible gifts to my Audible friends. You know, it's a good way to share a book with somebody you like. When you sign up at audible.com/windows, you can sign up for the Gold Plan, which will give you one book a month. It's on subscription. It's a great way to save money. And your first one is free. Actually, you technically get a credit a month, but that's good for a book in most cases. And your first credit is free. You can keep that even if you decide not to stick around. There's also, though, I should mention a platinum plan that lets you sign up for 2 books a month. The big readers like those. Somebody with a long commute. And I'll tell you, Audible is great. If you've got a commute, you will never regret signing up for Audible. It just saves your life. I think you're a better driver. You don't get as sleepy. You're paying attention more. And you come out of the car refreshed, feeling like, gosh, I got some library time. So you've got a pick. Is this your newest book? Are you listening to it right now?
Yeah, I meant to recommend this one 2 weeks ago, and I don't remember what happened.
Oh, I think I bumped you because we had something topical.
Something new, yeah.
Michael Crichton passed away.
Michael Crichton died. That was last weekend. But Robert B. Parker, the man behind the Spencer for Hire books, I believe.
Yes.
Has another series of books about a cop from Massachusetts called Jesse Stone.
Oh, that's why you like it. He's from Massachusetts.
Yeah, well, the way I found out about this is they make these TV movies now from these books with, I almost called him Magnum P.I.
Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck, thank you. Tom Selleck, of course, is the model for all men nationwide.
Absolutely.
And, the man we all want to be. So these stories are actually pretty good. So I thought this would be interesting. Spencer for Hire, obviously, also takes place in Massachusetts and was also a TV series for a little while. And anyway, they're kind of this is almost like summer reading. And I realize we're a little off season for this kind of thing, but, kind of on the light side. And, but they're kind of murder mystery type stories. I think they're kind of interesting. I mean, they're not the usual, I guess, for me. But
I love this kind of stuff because you can eat it like candy, frankly. So what I'll do is I'll read a heavy book like this Paul Krugman book, and then I'll have a little Robert.
It's
B.
like,
Parker.
Yeah, Thomas Friedman.
Yeah.
Then Robert Parker.
Right.
You got to go back and
forth. It's like a sorbet. It's a little palate cleanser in between your heavy duty reading.
Yes.
This sounds like fun. Death in Paradise. Paradise being a bucolic New England town of all things.
I haven't checked this. Stephen King has a new book out. I don't know if it's on Audible yet, but I'm reading it on the Kindle. It's a new collection of short stories.
I think I saw it actually. I'll check. Yeah, that would be another one. Save that for next time.
All right. I'll check.
Robert B. Parker's Death in Paradise. That's a good pick for your Audible book, your first book. Get into listening. I think it's good to start with a page turner, frankly, because then you forget that you're listening. And then by the time you reach the end of the book, you go, oh, wow, that went fast. I need another one.
Sure.
Audible.com/windows. Get yours today. We thank them so much for their support for Windows Weekly. And now, ladies and gentlemen, turn Vista into Windows 7.
Yeah, I got some emails the other day. I thought this was kind of interesting. There are certain Vista features, I guess, that inevitably are now being ported back by enterprising developers to Windows Vista. And good for them, really. One of them is a little on the lame side. There's a version of the Windows 7 calculator, for example. And who knows, it may even be code from Windows 7. So that's of dubious nature. But the other two are interesting. There's a feature in Windows 7 that we talked about, I think, last week called Arrow Snap. And that's the thing where you drag the windows to the edges of the screen and it reacts in different ways. So someone has ported that over to Windows Vista. That's a cool feature. That's actually very, very useful. And then this kind of is a fun feature, Arrow Shake, which is the one where you shake the window and it causes everything else to minimize. So you can just focus on that one window.
You shake the mouse, right? Not the window.
You shake. Well, you grab the mouse and you grab it.
You don't actually take your monitor and shake it.
That's right. You use the mouse. But anyway, the way to find out about these features, such as they are, is to go to the Supersite blog. So, winsupersite.com and then click on blog. And then if you don't see it right near the top, just look for the Windows 7 articles. There's a tags list on the right side. You can find it that way because, unfortunately, the URLs are so long. Because we're using community server that I couldn't possibly hope to tell you what it is. So that would be the way to find that stuff.
So is the Windows calculator the actual Windows 7 calculator or just a skinned calculator?
It's unclear. So it could be either. It might be the skins from the old calculator on top of the new calculator. I've heard that there are certain circumstances where it actually causes the old calculator to appear, but it's early yet. They'll get this stuff right. So, as is the case, my Apple comes out with Exposé, for example, on Mac OS X, and then 2 days later, there's a version for Windows you know, people see this stuff and they get excited and they release versions for free. So something to check out.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much, it is so much excitement. You might, this is a chance to really, hop on the bandwagon.
Just a sort of a side, tip. Is this a tip or what is this? This is, yeah, a tip, for people who have, Windows 7 M3, the version they released at PDC. We've discussed in the past how Rafael Rivera has been releasing, you know, unlocks for all the hidden features. So he's actually created a single tool now that will unlock all of the hidden features in M3. And what's cool about it is he called it the Blue Badge tool. And that's a reference to the Microsoft employees get a blue badge and it allows them, you know, break into the OS and get all the hidden features that are normally only available to Microsoft employees. So he's got a single executable now. You don't have to download a bunch
of extra. Much easier. Yeah. He's good. He's a little hacker, isn't he?
Yeah, he's good.
He's going to be great for the book. Is he going to have take that kind of, you know, secrets? Well, it is Windows secrets, isn't it?
Yeah, and I thought that was an interesting approach for the new version because, you know, in the past, way back when, you know, when Brian Livingston was working on, you know, Windows 3.1 secrets or Windows 95 secrets, you know, we didn't have the internet, at least not in the capacity we have it now. And people would find out information about Windows from books, you know, and those books sold really, really well. It's hard today to come up with a book. I'm not going to find out some secret and then wait on the book to release it because someone else is going to find it. And if I want to get that information out there, I have to put it out on the web. So in that world, I mean, how do you write about stuff and call it a secret? And how do you, you know, sort of do that? And for Windows Vista secrets, the approach I took was to say, well, the secrets are the things that you don't know about because they're new to Vista or they're changed in Vista or in the new edition. They're things that make Vista work better. And I took that sort of approach. But I think for Windows 7 secrets, in addition to doing that, you know, there's some stuff that Raphael's able to do by really looking deeply into the code and finding out information that is just not readily available. And you can see examples of that in the stuff he's releasing on his site now. So I think that's a sort of a new way of thinking about what constitutes a secret and how we can do that stuff going forward.
Excellent. Yeah, you're right. I mean, these things leak out so fast. There's no way you can kind of beat them in a book. By the time the book comes out, everything's known.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for those who know it, I mean, obviously there's always going to be a certain audience who, you know, is not aware of the website or, you know, doesn't follow it regularly or whatever. But, you know, for a lot of the people, this stuff is, you know, it's just out there. So you have to look at it a little differently.
Yeah, exactly. And now, you got is this another tip or is this
I also have a software of the week.
Software of the week. Well,
yeah, you know, in Windows 7, there's a new feature that exposes the restore boot by default. You know, so in Windows Vista, you have to install this thing manually. So if you need to recover your system for some reason, you can use the DVD or you can install the boot, you know, the restore volume.
Right.
You can do that stuff. But, you know, for people running Windows XP or even Windows 7 and they haven't maybe installed the stuff or they don't have a copy of their DVD, which is the case for a lot of people who get Vista with a new computer, you know, how do you recover a PC that can't boot, right? So there's something called the Ultimate Boot CD. And I just realized as I'm talking about this that I have not given credit to the person who told me about this. Let me find that.
It is. I've used the Ultimate Boot CD for a long time. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, there are two versions of it. There's the, you know, the version that is sort of the classic Ultimate Boot CD, which is actually, I think, a Linux CD.
Right.
Not that it matters. I mean,
no.
Really,
in fact, it's better in a way because you...
Yeah, it has, you know, a text menu and you pick tools and it
right.
lets you get your system back. But there also happens to be a version that is Ultimate Boot CD for Windows and it's Windows tools. For repairing or restoring or, you know, diagnosing whatever problems and so forth. So really, really interesting and really useful. And it's something everyone should have something like this. I mean, if you're, you know, one of Microsoft's enterprise customers and you're on Software Assurance, there's a tool in the desktop optimization pack, which you get for free, which has an amazing boot recovery tool that has all those system internal tools on it. It's just excellent. But, you know, for the rest of us, we need some way, you know, to get this you know, to get a system back up and running. So that's one way to do it. I can't find this person's name and I apologize for that. So next week I'll make sure I have that. So I apologize. Somebody told me about this via email.
Well, you can give credit to me because I've been plugging this thing for years.
Okay, there you go. I'm sure he'll be very happy about it.
He probably heard about it on the radio and just stealing my thunder. No, I often say that there are a few disks that you you know, you should have if you're a Windows user. This is one of them. Just it'll help you, you know, those times when you can't get booted or whatever, and it's got a lot of great stuff. You should keep it up to date because they have antiviruses on there and so forth, and you may want to update the definitions. But it's very
There are absolutely times when your system's not booting because of that kind of a problem. You've been hacked in some way,
right?
Whatever it is, and it's nice to be able to boot it up with a CD or DVD and get that stuff fixed, and then boot back in the system when it's safe.
Right. So there's one based on Linux, one based on Windows. I think the tools are pretty much the same.
Yeah, I think it's basically the same kind of tools set. And the URL for this is ultimatebootcd.com.
Very good. And the URL for Paul is winsupersite.com. That's the supersite for Windows. A must visit for anybody who's into Windows. Don't forget, he'll be playing on the Saturday. It's a chance for you to win one of 10 of the Windows Vista Secrets books, the current edition, which just came out for SP1. Should they do that again? Send you an email?
Just send me an email. Tell me you'd like a free, you know, you'd like to be entered into the contest, a free book, something like that.
And you have to do
like
it.
Like I said earlier. Oh, I'm sorry. Between 1 and 1:15 ET.
Eastern time.
ST, I guess. Yes. What are we in daylight savings time now? EDT or whatever it's called?
No, we're in regular time. So it's
we're in regular time. EST or ET? Yeah.
Yes.
Between 1 and 1:15 p.m. And I will count those emails up and I'll pick 10 winners from that pile and I'll get back to you if you won. I won't get back to you if you didn't. I apologize. And on that note, please don't email me other questions or comments because I probably won't see them.
Won't see a thing. So you're just going to turn the sluice on it. At 1 p.m. Eastern time, and then turn it off at 1:15, and then pick randomly from those.
There you go.
That's a clever way to do it. I have to do that.
That works pretty well.
Yeah. Paul Theroux, always a pleasure to talk to you. I'm sorry for those watching live that we were having trouble with getting Paul's video up. It's my fault, not Paul's. Paul was ready, and there's just some I changed routers. And
Jerk.
Never change routers in the middle of the stream, as they say. So,
did they say that?
They ought to if they don't. They really ought to, because it's true. Paul, we'll talk again next week about all things Windows.
Sounds good.
Take care.